Hey, this is WTOP's Jason Fraley, and we are being joined by, just say your name.
Hi, this is Chris Styles Bacon.
And you are part of the Strathmore's Artists in Residence program. It's accepting new applicants. I believe the deadline is February 1st. How cool was it to, you know, when they first told you that, hey, you've been selected for this thing?
Oh, man. So look, let me, so when I was selected, it was back in 2007. I'm alumni, but when I first was accepted, it was pretty good for me. I'm from Washington, D.C., Washingtonian from the Southeast, and I didn't really know much about Strathmore in the Artists in Residence program. You know, I was doing a totally different thing in this hip hop and poetry scene, and they reached out to me after seeing a feature of me in the Metro section of the Washington Post, and then just told me about the stuff they're doing, and I'm like, whoa, this sounds like an interesting program. You know what I'm saying? That could bring resources to some of the stuff that I'm working on, been trying to put together, but just didn't have the right resources to put it together.
Right, right. Well, I want to get more into the Artists in Residence program in a second. Like, you know, what all you did as part of it. But let's move a little chronologically then. You mentioned, you know, the Post, you know, wrote a piece on you and all that, but take me back even further. So you grew up in Southeast. Where exactly about? What part of the city?
So I'm from, as far as like what we call on the maps, it's known as Washington Highlands region, but okay. As far as like what we call it as a hood, we call it Condon Terrace. So that's where like Washingtonians would know it as. So I'm from that region right there. But then around the time when that was happening, I moved around like Benning Road, Marshall Heights area.
Okay, cool. Wanted to give a shout out for any other people who are listening. If they say, hey, that's my neighborhood. Where did you, how did you first get into music? I want to know your musical discovery.
Yeah, well, my mother used to be a DJ before I was born. And would do like parties locally and stuff. So my mom like loves music. Like she should work for a Harry Fox agency because she could find the sample in any recording and tell you where it comes from. And so growing up being her child, she will play music and DJ like stuff for like my grandma's generation, her generation, and then she knows the current music. So that and a mixture of just being a kid from Southeast, like we have go-go and go-go is so big and definitely was, I feel like even bigger at the time. So that's always coming out of cars on the radio. And we were always like, as kids in the neighborhood, we'd gather all these buckets and trash cans as communities and we'll bang on them and do like all like a big go-go drum circle, like on a weekly basis out there. So all of that stuff was in the neighborhood, and I just wanted to like create music. And I always hear like, oh, string sections and horn sections, but you know, you don't really have access like to just putting together strings and horn sections and stuff as a kid,
right?
And sometimes even as a young adult.
Hey, I hear you. When you're growing up, you don't have all access to all that stuff. You got to make your own stuff.
Exactly.
Well, cool. Did the Post also say you did a little beatboxing too?
Yeah. It was like one of my skill sets, guitar, beatbox, and all that. But beatboxing was my first instrument because we didn't we couldn't afford the drums, you know.
Right.
So I will always make these sounds in my mouth, and my mother pulled me to the side and played me like a Dougie Fresh record and let me know like what I was doing was beatboxing. And from there, I knew that these random sounds that I would do could be put together to form rhythms and create this first instrument of mine, the human beatbox.
That's the best thing, because that's the instrument that, you know, that we have it. We're born with it. No one can take that away from you. It's within yourself. You don't need to buy it. You don't need to update it. You don't need to preserve. Well, I guess you need to preserve.
Oh my God, it's
vocal
amazing.
Cord a little bit, but
yeah, it's so interesting, my friend, because like, if you actually lose your voice, like let's say if you became hoarse or whatever, you could still beatbox because it's not even dependent on the vocal cords. It's just sound. It's just the sound that is created from pushing air through the tongue and the teeth and the lips. So you can have no vocal cords and still do this.
That's so cool. I never really even thought about that. So yeah, there you go. There even So even more than just a singer, beatboxing is something literally no one can take away. Even if your voice is gone, you can still do it. That's awesome.
Amazing.
Cool. Well, all right. So then, just charting your journey a little more chronologically, then. So after that, you're beatboxing, your mom's DJing, you're sort of having a music discovery, as a kid growing up. Did you also go to Duke Ellington in DC?
So I went to Duke Ellington School of the Arts in DC as a visual arts major because I couldn't get in there for beatboxing and rapping and making beats. You know what I'm saying?
But they didn't have that as like a concentration at the time.
No, well, it was a big concentration, but like you had to have formal education, and we didn't have that. Like I only had one music class in elementary school, but I never got hooked up in the music classes. Like in middle school, elementary school, it's really strange. So I
I
just had
got
to
you. I got
read
you. So
about
they did
everything.
have it. It was just really competitive, you're saying.
You had to have formal education. Like you had to know how to read sheet music. I didn't know any of that. I could just put together music, and I had an idea how I wanted it to sound. So I was like, okay, I can't do that. But then I also had the talent of drawing, painting, and sculpting. So I got in through that one, and then started moonlighting in the instrumental music department. I started hanging out with all those folks and finding out what they were reading and reading the things that they were reading while I was in school. So
Gotcha.
that's how I started doing that. And then that led me to going to an after school program that Martha's Table would do at the time in Northwest. Called Crush Dice for it was like a creative writing workshop by this guy named Tim Jones, and he and his mentor and my mentor Bomani Amar, he would take me out to all the DC clubs and stuff, and open mics, poetry open mics to perform with him, and so introduced me to the whole DC open mic poetry scene, and from there stuff started like snowballing to the point where we ended up on the in the Washington Post.
Yeah,
And
so
then that's
that's
how
cool.
Strathmore connected.
Right, exactly. And real quick before we get to Strathmore, because I want to bring it back around full circle to that. But you said they started taking out to the different, clubs and different mi open mics and stuff around town. Didn't you get like a regular concert series at Atlas over on H Street Northeast?
That happened a bit. That happened like after, like around like 2015.
Okay, so that was after the whole Strathmore th residence thing. Okay. All right, well
Because
then.
there was a key breakthrough that happened at Strathmore that led to like the stuff that I was doing at Atlas and like my future like endeavors.
Kennedy Center, all that. All right, well then let's go into the Strathmore thing first, because it sounds like that precedes some of the other stuff I was going to ask you about. All right, cool.
Oh,
So
amazing. Yeah.
cool. So the Strathmore Artisan Residence thing, how did that come about? You said that was in what, 2000, what, seven? What'd you say?
2006, 2007. So I graduated high school in 2005. So I'm just like basically fresh out of school. So I'm fresh out of there at my mentor Bomani Amar. We're performing like all around the DC area. I'm doing things with a couple of my friends. We formed this band called Tribe Flavor. So we're doing a lot of performances and stuff and gaining some popularity, some local traction. And so this thing winds up on the Post, and the way that Betty Scott tells the story from Strathmore is that they were looking in the weekend section and saw this feature on me called Where Hope Meets Hip Hop, and on the front of the Metro section. And so her and a colleague, Georgina Javor, both got this paper and came in that Monday and showed each other paper like, yo, we need to have this cast set up for the Artists in Residence program. Right. And it was great that they did it because I didn't even know about that. Like it wasn't on my radar. Like, because for all I know, as a hip hop artist at the time and a person that comes from where I come from, those places weren't accessible to us. You know, like Kennedy Center,
Right.
Strathmore. And I didn't know about Strathmore because it was outside of DC. You know what I'm saying? I was straight DC cat, just through and through. And so they reached out to me and it was like artists in residence. I'm like, do I have to live there? You know,
Right, it says
and
residence.
yeah, for real, right? I didn't even know about this term, about this terminology. In hip hop, you don't really have like residencies, you know what I'm saying? Like there's some cultural differences here because we're talking about like arts presenters, concert hall, classical music type of thing, you know?
Right.
So So they reach out like, yeah, audition for this thing. So now I got to go out to Strathmore, which has its own metro stop, Grosvenor Strathmore Metro Station. I'm thinking it's all the way out there in Dunloren somewhere in the green line, on the blue and orange line. So I started heading in the opposite direction of Strathmore for the audition missed my audition time. Because once again, I'm from where I'm from. Folks in my community, it's like, we weren't really going all the way out there. You know what I'm saying?
Wait, did you say you missed your audition time?
I missed my audition time straight up. And I was just like, oh my God. And like, and then back then, like, you couldn't just like get everyone on the cell phone like that. So, you know what I'm saying? Like right now you can just text people and whatever.
So what did you do? What did you do? Just show up late and apologize profusely? Or how'd you get a hold of
me? Man, I course correct. And I was so stressed out, and I learned a really good lesson there. And one lesson is plot your directions before you go. That's the one lesson. But the larger lesson was once you course correct and you start going on the road for change, like, you know, saying stressing out about what you did wrong isn't going to like fix the situation at that point. You just got to ride the wave. So I get there, right? I get there at Strathmore, at the mansion at Strathmore for the audition, finally. And they was like, yo, you know, saying you missed your slot, but there's an opening now. There's an opening a little later. We could probably get you in right there. And so I got in at the opening and then did my audition. And then I found out a little later that I had got that position. Right. So of course that is great because I could have just lost. I just could have lost that opportunity. Right.
Right.
So that all worked out. And of course I was really excited because then my cohort would be like these jazz musicians, these experimental classical folks, some pop classical crossover folks, all of this stuff. I'm like the only one of my kind, like just a hip hop artist mixing go-go and try to do all these, mix all these different flavors together, you know? So yeah, that's how I got in the program. And I'm so glad that they reached out because I would not even know. And that one event and them kind of doing that outreach right there was a thing that definitely changed the trajectory of my career, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And I love how you that's such great symbolism that you put there about how, you know, that there's a life lesson there on the metro going the wrong way. Once you course correct in your life, this could be symbolic of many things. Once you course correct, you can't worry about, you can't live in the past and stress and make it ruin your audition or whatever you're doing in life. You know, you got to just course correct and do it. I love how you put that. All right. Well, let's talk about how it changed your trajectory then. So you do the Artist in Residence program. What opportunities came about after that? Because I know you got a Grammy nomination in 2010 for Banjos to Beatbox. So I guess, how do you credit maybe Strathmore and all of that with opening doors to maybe even get something like that?
So when I did my two public performances there, I always wanted to mix together horns, string section, like string section from classical, horns from jazz, all of this stuff with my whole thing about rapping, hip hop, go-go all together. I always wanted this blend to take place, but didn't have that as a kid. You know, I used to think about these and hum it into the karaoke machine. My mama's like Joyce Meyer, church sermon cassette tapes, you know?
Right.
But now I'm in this position. I'm like, whoa, I got these other artists in residence around me. I could finally pull together these people and make this idea a real thing, you know? And so, so I go to do that. Everyone's open and receptive. I start learning how to write sheet music, and reading these books and also putting the sheet music in front of their faces. And they say, hey, Chris, my dude, this is a viola. You don't just put it on the treble clef. You got to change it like this, you know? Right. And, just like all this music stuff. So basically my music education is also happening right there. You know what I'm saying? But what was on the menu as far as like what they was teaching us as an artist in residence was like some business management stuff. Like, oh, how are you managing like your finances right here? How do you do taxes as an artist? You know what I'm saying? How do you do effective and efficient rehearsal and practice as an artist? You know, it just like we don't learn a lot of these things in school. And sometimes you could go to any school of the arts and they could teach you how to create art, but they don't teach you how to manage the business aspects of it.
Such a good point. All those little tricks.
It's really
to the
interesting. Yeah, right. But the thing is, when you go in the world and you create art, that business piece is very important because that's the difference between you being a starving artist and a fed artist. You hear me? So like the starving artist thing will continue to go on if we don't learn about the business part and the administrative part and how to work with administrative professionals to end up in places like Kennedy Center.
That's true.
And the Kennedy Centers around the world. So I got hip to all of that stuff through them. You know what I'm saying? How to rewrite the bio and what to focus on, you know? So that stuff was so valuable. And those were all the things I learned in that program, in addition to having the opportunity to put everyone together. And so they also pair you with a mentor. So the mentor will be like just advanced in the game, know a lot more, have a lot of experience. And so not only do y'all collaborate musically, but you know, y'all talk about things and stuff, and they just help put you in the right direction. It's great. It's like a good music school program that is free, and you actually get paid to perform. and you get press. You get good press and a good press kit from it, and you get good professional photos from it. All these great things, right? come on now. Like, so I think Strathmore is doing a really good thing because they're breathing a different type of life into our local music scene, creating opportunities for people on a local level to start growing things to a point where they could even start venturing out more and more and more in a different way. And especially into the classical jazz and the arts presenter scene, which I feel is really lucrative, you know? So I'm doing this concert. One of the mentors, Kathy Fink, who was just like a G in music and just being like a woman starting out in her scene doing like folk music, bluegrass and all that as a banjo player. Like, I mean, she's amazing. Like, just to be a woman and navigate the music industry the way that she has. And I mean, her and her partner Marcy Mars are like Grammy'd up, you know what I'm saying? Like, they know what they're doing. They're great. They're legendary. So she went to my concert and saw what I was doing, putting all these things together effortlessly, right? With like someone, like an Indian guy playing tabla, which is like a two-headed percussion instrument from Northern Indian classical music. And then playing a didgeridoo from Australia and all these wild things together to create like a music that makes sense with hip-hop and go-go. So she was like, okay, look, I'm going to give you this video and stuff that I shot there, but let's do this like little thing real quick while we waiting for this thing to transfer from this hard drive to my laptop. It was a G4 MacBook, and you know, transfer speeds weren't that fast as it is now.
Sure, yeah.
Just for context. So we were waiting some time. She pulls out this banjo and starts going in on the banjo, playing some amazing music. And then I start beatboxing over it, thinking about all the different rhythms that I could put over it. And then she's like, yo, I think we got something here. We should work on a project together. So then she brings in her partner, Marcy Marksa, and we start creating all of this music, right? Mixing together old-time banjo, beatboxing, some rapping in there, and what they're doing with singing and songwriting. And then, you know, they're spearheading and leading that project. And so then that project, I mean, I don't really like swear in any of my music and stuff like that, just because my mom said as an MC, it's a crutch if I use certain words all the time, you know? So my mom always challenged me to not, you know, use any like swear words or anything like that. Just to promote communication across the board. So I'm writing songs with that. They're doing their thing. So everything fits together. And it's like, yo, this is music that would be perfect for the family audience. You know, I wasn't even thinking about it. I'm just creating music. Like, but they just like, oh, this will be good for that. Then starts winning these Parent Choice Awards. Boom, boom, boom. Doing this thing. Next thing you know, I get a call from the local Grammy chapter, Recording Academy chapter, that yo, I'm on U Street in front of I'm on 13th and U Street in front of the Rite Aid, chilling with my homegirl, and the person from the Grammy chapter calls me on the cell phone. It's like, yo, Chris, you've been nominated for a Grammy. You got to get your outfit together. You got to come to LA, walk that red carpet. I'm like, wow. What is this? What is this?
Not the call you're expecting standing in front of the Rite Aid.
Yo, I mean, that is straight up.
No one is prepared for the Grammys to call them.
You know, straight up like that. That's that. And, you know, if I guess if all those things didn't happen there, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, because of Strathmore, I was able to put together this idea. Kathy Fink saw the idea, was inspired by then, think we should work together, you know, because she a bridge too, you know, she likes to bridge together worlds, and like and then this happened. So this collaboration and that whole nomination happened as a result of the Artist in Residence program right there. So I'm so grateful for Strathmore, for Kathy Fink, who is still a mentor in this program to this day, you know what I'm saying? So anybody who becomes an artist in residence will meet this woman, you know.
And man, if I was Strathmore, I would plaster your Banjo's the Beatbox Grammy nomination story all over my brochures and websites. That's such a great success story. Well, wait a minute, real quick, before we get back to Strathmore, tell me about that experience. So was that your first time flying out to LA? What was it like walking the red carpet, being in the ceremony? Like, just any good stories from that whole trip?
Oh my goodness, man. Look,
he's like, how much time you got?
Man, lessons learned all day, man. It's profound. Like, okay, that's my first time going to LA. I had been to San Francisco before because I was on the 2005 Youth Poetry Slam team.
Okay.
To compete in the nationals. And so I've been to San Francisco one time, but LA is a different vibe, you know what I'm saying? Like, totally. That's a different vibe from San Francisco. And so then first time going to LA, long plane ride, and you know, you're basically there. It's more than just the Grammys, it's all the stuff that leads up to the Grammys, all the press stuff that leads up to it, working with a stylist to get an outfit together, you know, getting prepared for that. And so man, I got connected with this great publicist, Priscilla Clark, that was just like put me on to everything and like taught me how to take pictures without blinking. You know what I'm saying? Like, stuff you don't even think about. But
how do you do that? The eyes start watering, man.
Look, I know, right? I know. So like every time a flash would go off, my eyes would be closed every time. And you know, in this world, flash photography is here. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's how it works. And so you got to anticipate the flash. And you got to open your eyes a little extra wide because my eyes are just so sensitive. So, so that's just a little nerd moment right there. So, like, so then there's that. So you go out there to LA and I'm walking the red carpet. And, you know, Betty Scott, all my friends that work at Men at Strathmore, they came out with your boy, too, you know. So, nice. So we're all out there. It's like we're just a whole crew, you know, going out there. And we attend the pre-telecast, which was amazing. This dude, Charlie Wilson, was performing there, like from the Gap Band, and killed that joint. And I'm so caught up in the pre-telecast, my publicist is like, hey, Chris, ain't you trying to walk the red carpet? I was like, yeah. She was like, yo, we need to go right now. I'm like, oh my God, I was caught up watching this joint and Sheila E. about to perform next. Okay. They have like the craziest like musicians perform for the pre-telecast. And then all the famous, all like the real popular pop artists performing the telecast, right? Because that's like the honey, you know?
Right.
So, and then at that time, they had like over like 100 different categories, but only like a few, like a handful of categories will actually get televised for the telecast that everyone watches at home. So I get ready to roll, and then we just get on the red carpet, me, the publicist, whatever, walking up over there. And Charlie Wilson is actually walking over there at the same time. So we're chatting it up and stuff, hit that red carpet, and all the media outlets are on the right side and stuff and whatever. So I'm on there at the same time as the A-listers, right? And interviews are being made and whatever. I see T-Pain and Usher and I'm like, wow. A lesson that I realized right then and there was, wow, everyone's short. and then so I keep on walking. My publicist is like, All right, Chris, go over there and take a picture and holler at the people from the Make-A-Wish Foundation. And then I want you to make a U-turn and come back. All right, because it's someone I want to introduce you to. So I start walking, I'm taking the pictures, and I see like these big bodyguards go through the section where everyone else is traveling just for general admissions, right? And then they come out where the photo, where the Step and Repeat Grammy joint is to take the official photos for the Grammys. And when the bodyguards part, it's Beyonce, totally skipping the media section and all that. And I'm like, wow, she's like freaking like 20 feet away from me, right? I'm like, dang, little Beyonce, oh, she's doing her thing, taking the pictures like a pro. Pretty sure she's not blinking when the flashes go off, you know? And then after that, I go take my pictures and then I make a U-turn. I go see the publicist and she's like, hey, Chris, turn around. Hey, Chris, meet Dougie Fresh. Dougie Fresh, meet Christoph Bacon. I'm like, wow, this is the dude who my mom played for me that got me hooked and introduced to beatboxes. So I met him right then and there at that moment. So that's like a really amazing experience right there. And just like being at the Grammys and being at the after parties and all that. But one thing I realized on that carpet, being around everyone's like, wow, like the person that performs at a dive bar, the person that performs on TVs and at festivals full of like in front of thousands of people, we are all doing the same thing in the same industry. It's all connected. It's just like one's on TV, one's not. You know what I'm saying?
True. You're right. Everybody's just people. We're all artists. Everyone puts their pants one leg at a time.
Yeah, and at each stage, you're exposed to different numbers of people. If you're performing at a dive bar, then you have access and you're visible to these people that could fit in this venue at any given point of time, right? So then your fan base is based on this, this, and this and that. Now, if you're a local artist and you're touring, then this is the number of people you're exposed to. Once you get to a certain level, like Beyonce is on, you could do these type of venues, you're exposed to this many people. So it's like, it's just like, well, your music has to captivate people and like make them feel a way. And you have to have a good business mindset in order to do it too. And have good business people around you. So you have to know that part of the game. Wow. And other than that, it's a numbers game. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But it's so cool that you got, like you said, you got to go full circle with, you know, Dougie Fresh, who your mom had told you about, and you sort of, you know, was an idol for a while and an icon. And now suddenly you're there on a red carpet meeting them. That must feel like you kind of made it at some point. And now you're all, and by the way, just so our listeners know, I got to mention, when you're out there in your category of the children's album, you're going up against like Pete Seeger and I guess Ziggy Marley ended up winning.
Ziggy Marley won that joint with his family. Talking about, hey, I think if Ziggy Marley wasn't there, we probably would have hit it. But you know what, though?
Right.
Like, I'm so glad I didn't.
Now, did you get to meet Ziggy?
Yeah. Well, like briefly and stuff like that. It was just like so brief. You know what I'm saying?
Sure. It's a whirlwind.
It's going in dressing rooms. And then I had this whole little thing about me. Like, I don't really get starstruck. And like, I always like to think, I like to try to think for other people. I'm like, oh yeah, I don't want to stress anybody. So I just, you know, I mean, I'm a little hood dude from Southeast. So I'm just like, hey, what's up? I just give them a quick nod real quick. And if a person seems like they open to want to chop it up, I chop it up with them. But you know, sure. I know it's hard. It could be hard being like a public figure, being someone who is really known for something, because people would just go up and just want to have long conversations with you at a time that's not really the best time, you know? Oh, so yeah. I always try to be cognizant of it and just be like, okay, I'll just give you a nod real quick, a little dap and pound, and we just, you know, keep it moving, you know?
Yeah, I'll put the ball in your court. If you want to talk, we'll talk. But otherwise, I'll just nod at you.
Exactly.
Well, cool. Well, that's a lifelong, you know, once in a lifetime experience. Well, you know what? Hopefully not once in a lifetime. Hopefully back. But
no, my friend, it has been like I haven't been at the Grammys recently, but I've been like life beyond that point has been even crazier than that.
Yeah.
Like as far as like trajectory and music and what's going on right now and what I'm doing with collaborate, it's been up and up, and I did not see it this coming. You know what I'm saying? The way, you know.
Well, yeah, that whole Grammy experience, a lot of people, that would be like the crowning achievement. But man, that was 11 years ago. You've done a ton of stuff since. So talk about how, now that you can slap that label Grammy nominee on everything you do, you know, the fame, the recognition that, and acclaim that comes from that. How has that sort of helped you? I mean, did that help you get the gig at Atlas and at the Kennedy Center, all that kind of stuff?
Well, the Strathmore thing helped the Kennedy Center thing happen. Hold on. Did the Kennedy Center thing happen with Strathmore? No, that happened with a different thing. That was the African American Museum doing something for Black History Day that happened. But I know that Strathmore continues to have a cool relationship with Kennedy Center. And I hope, they're great. So what happened, even before Grammys, right? The Strathmore program and being an artist in residence there and having that presenter attached to, you know, what I do in my story, it helps legitimize some things because performing in the scene here in DC, you know, saying it's cool, you hit certain venues up, but some people, they just don't take you seriously, right? Because there are a lot of artists trying to do something on the local level, right? And trying to grow. There are a lot of artists. So they're like, how I know that you on some other stuff or that you're serious about things, you know what I'm saying? Just like, oh, the consistency and the work. But for some people, they need certain people to do a stamp. It's just like good credit. You know what I'm saying? Right. It's just like, hey, this person doesn't have any credit at all, any credit history. How do I know that I could trust them with this line of credit? You know what I'm saying? Like he don't know anybody I know that could vouch for him, you know? And so it's just like, oh, you did this with Strathmore? Okay, they could vouch for you because they put out good stuff. They have a reputation. And so that allowed me to make moves even before the Grammy, you know what I'm saying? So that legitimizes things. And then you come through with anything, a Grammy nomination, a Grammy and win in the joint. That legitimizes things because it's like, hey, this is what I'm doing. I'm doing this. Oh, yeah. You're an artist. Yeah, you're a musician. You know, of course, there are tons of musicians out here in the world, just like there are tons of writers, everything. So they're just like, you know, everyone wants to do this and this and that. And it's just like, okay, let me check his resume. Oh, okay, Grammy nomination. It just helps you. It just helps cut to the chase. You know, the product and music and stuff and integrity and consistency is still the same, but it just helps cut to the chase. You know what I'm saying? It's like having a MacArthur Genius Grant or a Nobel Peace Prize or something. I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's like, okay, I know which level you are on.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I could place you quickly, you know? Exactly. So it definitely helps make moves and make sense of things, you know what I'm saying? So we could cut to the chase real quick and get this together. So that's great. And but since then though, because that was like the banjo, the beatbox part was like an early collaboration mixing together, like one of my earliest collaborations mixing together hip hop and folk music, bluegrass and stuff, and banjo. But I always wanted to do this, connect with people, because I see how being a musician and being an artist, since I'm Duke Ellington, you're exposed to different people from different walks of life. And they're open to talk to you. So I've talked to people who probably people growing up in my hood would never be able to talk to. One, because they're not in our neighborhood. Two, because they might be they might have all the things in their head of what they think that a person, what a Black person from where I'm from is like. You know what I'm saying? And they might be scared of them or whatever. But because I'm an artist and I'm open, I just got this little, you know what I'm saying, this open energy. This receptive energy, I have conversations. I found out how we're more common than we are different, you know, and what our cultural differences are. And these are things to be celebrated. And so I wanted to replicate these experiences for my people and then for everyone else, of course, you know what I'm saying? And so I continue to do these collaborations because I think collaboration is the good tool. The arts always helps connect people and bring people together, like visual arts, definitely culinary arts, because, you know, who doesn't love a taco? You know what I'm saying? There are people that think that there are people on this planet that think that they don't like Mexican people, right? But they love a taco. If you love a taco, that right there is the beginning of you starting to truly get to know Mexican folks and love them, you know?
Exactly. From salsa to salsa, you know, from the arts, food to the arts.
Yes. Yes. And so the arts is so powerful for this. So this pretty much becomes my goal at this point, cultural acceptance and unification through music. So then I started a cross collaboration series called Washington Sound Museum. Started doing it at the small place called Bloom Bars every month, collaborating with different artists from different countries and different styles of music. Then I took it to the Atlas and blew it up so I could have like lights, the big lighting stuff and stage design, all this stuff. And I continue to do that. And so now these collaborations continue into this day, and it has put me in a position to collaborate with National Symphony Orchestra on like 4 occasions, you know what I'm saying? And not just playing like classical music, but them playing my actual music, you know? So who gets to say that, oh yeah, I'm from here and stuff. And I've written music for National Symphony Orchestra, my music, and they have played it. And now
right,
the holder.
Right. Yeah. Oh yeah. What did they play last week? Oh, Beethoven, Mozart, and Christoph Speaking.
Exactly. And then the thing is, and to this day, I do a lot of work with symphony orchestras, and I got a piece debuting this year, a beatbox concerto with Wheeling Symphony Orchestra in West Virginia, and do stuff with Princeton Symphony Orchestra. And so whenever I'm working with symphony orchestras and stuff, I always they need the sheet music. And so they need sheet music and charts for 70 people. And so it's a whole ordeal to be like, it's a whole thing as far as like, how do you ship and package it so that it's not damaged and you deliver it to the orchestra, right? And it takes all these fees. So National Symphony Orchestra, the Kennedy Center, they're the holders of my orchestral library.
Wow.
So it's just like, oh yeah, you need the stuff for this, for Mambo Sauce, my song Mambo Sauce. I called the NSO librarian, and then they have it shipped right over to you. And we have that relationship. Like, I have that relationship with NSO, you know what I'm saying?
Man,
and
that like, just sounds so legit when you're like, oh yeah, go have my people talk to your people, and your people are the NSO.
call the NSO librarian. Oh yeah, I know her. Yeah, she's cool. And she is cool. Like, she is. And so, like, we have all these cool, like we have such cool local relationships, but all of these things happen because of the building blocks and the foundation and getting all this admin training, working with Strathmore's artists and residents. So you have that happening. So that's one collaboration. And then thanks to the DC Commission on Arts and Humanities, we have all these grants, right? And now I think what they do every year with the artists and residents is you have a grant writing workshop. So this is so great. Like, how many artists do you know out there? Like, that's like, yeah, I'm a rock. Yeah, we're a rock band, but we be writing grants. You know what I'm saying? But this is the type of stuff, if you like going through this program, you'll be able to say and do. And if you can write a grant, that means you got to learn how to manage the finances of it. That means you got to know how to do all the grant reporting. You keep track of the receipts. That's cool, because you're going to need that for taxes anyway, you know? And you got to be on top of all that stuff. And then you write this grant and you get this money to do these crazy projects, and then boom. So I wrote a whole grant to keep the collaboration going for my concert series to create a culture exchange program between Brazil and DC. So Brasilia, wow. Brazil and DC through my program called Washington Sound Museum. And so I got this grant from DC Commission on the Arts and Humanities to do that. And so me and, you know, my folks and a documentary filmmaker, because I also wanted to shoot a documentary, manage the money so that I could also shoot a documentary and make a documentary out of the whole culture exchange piece. Because that was my first time going out of the country.
What was that film Brazil. Called? Can we find it somewhere?
Oh, it's still in the film festival circuits right now. It's called Washington. It's called Washington Sound Museum after the concert series, Hip Hop Meets the Music of Brazil.
Wait, so which festivals have you played in so far? If you know, I'm a huge film guy. I'm just curious.
Oh my goodness. We did some local film festivals. We did the Pedra Azul Film Festival in Brazil and some other joints. We haven't hit no Sundance yet, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, pray for your boy, you know what I'm saying?
Prayers are being said, my friend.
Look, I appreciate you. And so go over there, collaborate with this artist who I was just meeting for the first time. And we do workshops. I do workshops over there where I teach people like DC music and American music. And I also take workshops on doing Brazilian music. We do a whole performance there. Then I fly all these Brazilian musicians back to DC. They do master classes at Duke Ellington School of the Arts. And we do a big performance here in DC. So we shot a whole documentary out of that. And then we screened the documentary in DC in 2011. No, in 2019, because we traveled in 2015, did the whole thing. So we screened it in Brazil, the capital, and the sister city of Brazil, Washington, D.C. And so since then, we've been racking up some reads there and using it as a proof of concept. Now we're working on transitioning this whole collaborative stuff into television, into like doing a whole show with this one. It's like Anthony Bourdain's No Reservations, but instead of food as the entry point into culture, we use music as the entry point into culture. And at the end of every episode is a collaborative piece that is created. So it's just like, all right, yo, we're up in India and we're doing this. And at the end of the episode, you see beatboxing and Indian classical music. So that's, you know what I'm saying? These are the things that are worked out right now. So doing all these collaborations and continuing the collaborations, even during the Rona, where we can't really travel and do concerts on a level that might make sense financially. I'm putting out a lot of these beatbox remix videos. It's a series I'm doing on YouTube and Instagram where I'm collaborating with these different people from different countries using just the beatbox. So much props and shout out to Strathmore for hooking us up not only with the opportunity to express ourselves artistically and to make, you know what I'm saying, to make stuff happen on the artistic end, but also on the music administrative end and getting us hip to that. Because if that's not there, then you know there's only so much you could do as far as like acquiring finances to create art on a certain level, you know?
Oh yeah, and, absolutely.
Yeah, and just making it possible to reach certain people in certain places, you know? So I'm hella grateful.
Such important work that they're doing. And we want to tell everybody, you know, the deadline, I read that it was February 1st to apply. If there's any other up and coming artists out there around the DC area, if you want to apply, head over to strathmore.org and try to get into the artist in residence program. And don't worry, even if you get on the metro the wrong direction, you can still make it.
Hey, there you go. I just want everybody to know Grosvenor Strathmore is the metro stop. It's on the red line. It's not the orange. It's not by Dunloren.
It's up above Bethesda. Yeah, North Bethesda, everybody. head north. Well, or it depends early where you're coming from. If you're in Rockville, head south.
And you had to do it early. Let me tell you, DC tip from a DC native, the red line always breaks down. So, you know, early.
Exactly. Well, I appreciate you joining us, Chris Styles Bacon. We went like 45 minutes. I'm going to, you know, I thought I was going to combine you and Langston Hughes into one piece about the residence program. I think I can get two pieces out of this. I think I might even break it up and do, you know, you as one piece and then do a whole separate piece with Langston. And then we can give lots of love to Strathmore. Why not? Let's do it.
Man, I appreciate you putting that on, because I mean, you know, like even if I wasn't like associated with Strathmore and, you know, it had like such good feelings about them, I think it's so dope because by you like putting this out there for people, like you're potentially making it possible for so many local people to become like, you know what I'm saying, like stronger and larger, you know, by just like exposing people to this information, you know.
Well, that's the hope, you know. Maybe someone is riding and just hears this little real quick blip on the radio, or maybe they click. I mean, well, write an article too. Maybe they'll see the article on Twitter and they'll click it and they'll apply, and you know, there'll be some amazing artist that we don't you and I can't even fathom at the moment. You know, maybe it's just some kid that hears it. And you know what I mean? Like that's the exciting thing to me.
Yo, Jason, the game is so different now. Like, you know, if you want to see, like, you know, you want to see great artists, right, perform some music, it's just like, okay, I'm gonna go to this place, I'm gonna go to this club or whatever. But the game is so different now that like some of the greatest artists probably won't even be doing that. They're probably in school right now doing this and this and that, and they just share their stuff digitally online. They might just have a page on SoundCloud or something, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it the game is just so it's so different. You there's so many options and so many ways to do it that things are scattered, you know? So it's like, it's not like decades ago where it's just like, okay, if you want to hear everything, you just go on radio to hear everything, you know? Or you just go out to this bar, you know? Right. So people need to there needs to be all these connections made, you know what I'm saying? I'm so happy. Like this makes our string, you putting this out here, it makes our scene stronger, you know?
Well, likewise, we wouldn't have anything to cover if it wasn't for your awesome work. So thanks for paving the way and showing everybody that it can be done through this Strathmore program. It's great. So everyone, you know, apply. It really can pay off, literally and figuratively. So, hey, I really appreciate you joining us.
Hey, thank you, man. Appreciate you, man. I hope to see you out here as things become safe and stuff. What music do you like to get down with, man?
Man, I do a little bit of everything. I mean, I grew up listening to everything from, you know, my dad was a big classic rock guy, but I grew up in like the cornfields of Frederick, Maryland. So I was a bit, my wife opened for the Dixie Chicks when she was so
what?
I got some country vibes back when we were growing up. But man, rock, I mean, we did the whole hip hop thing all through, you know, middle school, high school. The first cassette tape I bought was Whoomp, There It Is. That's how that dates me.
Wow. tag team back again.
Right. I love seeing them back on that commercial. But with the sprinkles.
Oh my God, that's great.
But yeah, I mean, yes. I could talk to you all day, but like that's what I love about our generation. I feel like we're all exposed to such an array of music. Like you just can't help but doing it now, and especially now post internet. But like, you know, I feel like the up and coming generation is becoming the most multicultural, most open-minded, most diverse generation. Let's just keep it going.
Yo, and we need it, because I think the issues, the problems that we have on like happening in our society and with our planet in general, it needs complex thought. Mm-hmm. And it needs everyone's cooperation. Like to solve issues, like as far as like just global scale issues of like hunger, resources, and climate change and stuff. I'm like, man, if everyone can come and drop beef,
right.
I mean, really the Rona too. Like if we all can't work this out, they're gonna be all types of variants, and we're gonna go through this again. Like,
of course, you know, of course. Can we all get on the same page?
But it's just like, yo, if it affects someone in any part of the world, we're gonna get it. Like, because of globalism, like we're so like we depend on like this shipment in order to keep our society going, in order to manufacture the things that we need on the regular, right? The tech we need. It's just like, man, we're so interconnected right now that we can't afford to not talk to each other. We can't afford to not work together.
Well, let's,
you know,
keep
what I'm saying?
Let's keep the interconnectedness going. Like, I know I'm sure there'll be growing pains and people forced to confront hard truths about our history that they don't want to, but they have to. And then now they're forced to, because boom, there's cell phone footage. Boom, there's, you know, YouTube. You can watch, you know, you learn about all the, you know, the seedier sides of American history. So like, Yeah, but like, but it's a positive. I think the technology is it's a positive. Like, seriously, like, growing up, would you and I have been able to hop on a random Tuesday on our computers and have this awesome long conversation? No, we couldn't. Like, so technology's, I think it is, we're becoming interconnected. It's fantastic.
Hey man, and to quote a little proverb from Tag Team, whoop, there it
That's the Proverbs right
is. Yeah.
Oh, I love it, man. Well, where can people find you? I just followed you on Twitter, but why don't you shout plug yourself so people listening to this can find you.
Yeah, my friends, I'm on all the social media things. I'm on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. You can find me Chris Styles Bacon, Chr Abra with my accent, Christylez, last name Bacon, Bacon. It's my real last name.
I love it. I love it. Well, I appreciate you joining us. This was an awesome conversation, and all the best. We'll follow your progress as you keep going in your career. I love it.
Thank you, man. Catch you sooner than later, man.
All right. Talk to you later.
All right. Peace.